Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode contains material that may be disturbing to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
How we started it was that we had meetings. We had a lot of meetings. We were trying to figure out every person who could know anything, just anything about it.
As 2012 came to a close, two Finnish investigative journalists, driven by persistent rumors, began delving into the operations of Helsinki's drug police unit.
Altogether, we had maybe five or six cases, and we decided we are going to investigate this.
Embarking on what would become a revealing journey, these journalists were initially unaware of the magnitude of what they were about to uncover. Their investigation expanded to include interviews with over 100 individuals, sifting through tens of thousands of documents. They found themselves in a struggle to make the public aware of the truth, which was shrouded by a charismatic and influential figure at the heart of the controversy. This individual had the power to shape the narrative, both legally and in the media, making it difficult for anyone to challenge or question his authority.
If somebody tried to question anything or ask too many questions about anything, he got furious, and some people wanted to leave his unit because of his methods. They understood that there was something very shady going on.
The deeper the journalists delved into their investigation, the more they realized that the reality of the situation was more bizarre and complex than any fiction.
I couldn't literally believe my eyes. I tried to call Minna, but Minna was talking on the phone, and then I typed an email to her. Stop talking right now! Urgent!
These journalists were not the only ones probing into the matter. As the case progressed, it moved to the courtroom, rapidly evolving into one of the most significant and thought-provoking criminal cases in Finnish history.
I think it was the scope of the case that made it special, because it lasted about 10 years, and also how many different branches it had. So it is probably the biggest case in Finnish history that had many different ensembles.
You are listening to Nordic Crimes. Emperor Arnu, Bad Cop. As 2012 draws to a close, Finnish audiences are captivated by Daniel Craig's latest portrayal of James Bond in 007 Skyfall. Domestically, the buzz is about Finland's recent acquisition of 70 new fighter jets, sparking debates on the nation's defense needs and the possibility of joining NATO. A study reveals that regardless of age, gender, or economic background, Finns predominantly turn to the media for surprising news that delves into societal issues. Little do they know, 2013 is set to unveil stories that will indeed capture their attention.
My name is Susanna Reinbot, and I'm a crime reporter at Helsingin Sanomat.
Susanna Reinbot, an esteemed investigative journalist with 24 years of experience in crime and legal reporting, finds herself at a professional crossroads by the end of 2012. Her workplace, Channel 4 News, merges with the renowned Helsingin Sanomat magazine. This transition brings her a new colleague, Minna Passi, a seasoned legal journalist from Helsingin Sanomat.
Very soon we noticed that both of us had heard rumors about a Helsinki drug police, that they have some shady methods and some irregularities. And then we decided that we have to sit down and tell each other everything we have heard about it. So we did. It was in January 2013. And we just chatted and told each other what we had heard. The interesting thing was that both of us had heard several cases where there had been some really weird incidents, but none of the cases was the same, and altogether we had maybe five or six cases. Then we decided that this is too much to be a coincidence, so we have to look into it closer. And we decided we are going to investigate this.
Whatever the two journalists decided to investigate, they had no idea what they would stumble into.
It was quite a long project, it turned out to be. We thought it was a quite much smaller case, so we didn't know what we were jumping into when we started. We thought that the Helsinki drug unit investigated crimes with illegal methods, but their aim was legal.
In the end, the truth turned out to be more severe than this. Prior to meeting Minna, Susanna had heard from another legal journalist colleague about a prostitute named Ina, who reportedly had intriguing stories about Jari Arnio, the head of Helsinki's police drug unit. Although Susanna was initially skeptical about Ina's credibility due to her minor criminal record, the emerging concerns surrounding the Helsinki police drug unit prompted her to explore Ina's claims further.
She told a lot of stories. She had been seeing Arnia for almost 15 years, and so she had a lot of stories. And we met several times, and we started calling almost every day. And every time she had new stories, and we also went through the previous stories and checked details. Details is something that I wanted, and details are important to check if the story is true. But of course, there were a lot of things that Ina said that I couldn't check. For instance, if she told that Arnio had said something to her, that's impossible to check. That's why we needed other details to sort of get the idea how reliable she was. We checked all the details we could check, and it turned out that we couldn't catch her lying, so they were all true.
And Ina's revelations led the journalists down a lengthy path that would consume years of their professional lives. Before speaking to Susanna, Ina had already reached out to the Ministry for Internal Security and Migration. On January 28, 2013, Ina was on her way to meet with senior officials to discuss her nearly 15-year sexual relationship with Jari Arnio, substantiated by text messages and other evidence. She planned to share with them the same account she would later give to Susanna. For Ina, the encounters with Arnio began in 1998.
They met in the late 90s when Ina was involved in a case where there had been some attacks against policemen and prosecutors and other civil servants. And there was a list of names. It was called a killing list of suspected victims of criminals' revenge. So it turned out that Ina had got the addresses of the civil servants through her friend. And Ina was questioned by the police, and it turned out to be Jari Aarnio. So that's how they met.
Ina had received a list of addresses from her then-boyfriend, unaware of its sinister purpose. These addresses enabled criminals to target officials who were interfering with their operations. Between 1995 and 1996, the criminal underworld launched a series of violent acts. Attempted break-ins, Molotov cocktail attacks, assaults on a police officer and a lawyer, shootings targeting a police informant, a car bomb outside a police station, and the arson of a drug prosecutor's summer cabin. These acts were intended as a warning to officials to back off from their criminal enterprises. Even Aarnio appeared on this hit list. And on December 5th, 1996, he too seemed to become a target.
Aarnio got a hand grenade in his backyard, and it is true that some criminals were planning to do an attack on Aarnio, but when he started to investigate this with Minna, it turned out that the actual plan was true, but the grand finale was by Aarnio himself. Everything indicates to that.
Everything points to this because the person meant to plant the bomb in Aarnio's backyard was arrested just days before, and crucial documents related to his arrest and house search mysteriously vanished from police records. Intriguingly, the bomb discovered at Aarnio's place differed from descriptions given by those arrested. It raised eyebrows how Aarnio, a midwinner, handily found gardening scissors to defuse a still-burning fuse. While the National Bureau of Investigation was officially in charge, it appeared the drug unit, with Aarnio deeply involved, conducted most investigations, allowing him to stay a step ahead.
Aarnio has always been a charismatic person. He can talk, he loves to talk, he loves attention, and he's easy to talk to. So he becomes a very known policeman, maybe the best known policeman in Finland. Even people who don't follow very closely to any crime news, they would know Jari Aarnio.
Ina and Arnio's relationship started in 1998, paralleling Arnio's rising public profile. He was already a celebrated figure. Having been named Police Officer of the Year in 1987 and receiving the Police Cross of Merit in 1995, his ascension of the head of Helsinki's drug police in 1999 solidified his status as Emperor Aarnio. He had carefully cultivated his inner circle within the department, ensuring loyalists surrounded him when he took the helm. This created a division within the force, those in Arnio's favor and those who were not, with Aarnio making his preferences and displeasures clear.
If somebody tried to question anything or ask too many questions about anything, he got furious that you are not allowed to ask these questions and you are stupid and go away. And then some people wanted to leave his unit because of his methods, that they understood that there was something very shady going on. They didn't maybe know exactly what it was. I don't think nobody knew what was actually going on, but I think all of them must have known that there was something shady in that business.
And there really was something shady in that business. Under Arnio's leadership, the already strained relationship between the Helsinki drug police and the National Bureau of Investigation deteriorated further.
The National Bureau of Investigation and Helsinki Drug Unit, they actually have a long history and they have never gotten along very well. They have been rivals. Everybody wanted to be the best in Finland, so they had many disputes. But everything got worse when Arnio came to lead the Helsinki Drug Unit, so that didn't help the situation. And when we started with Minna to investigate this, we made this question that why are they fighting all the time? And one thing we noticed that everything goes well if there are no informants in the case. But as soon as informants come into picture, everything changes. Nothing works anymore. They don't share information. So our conclusion was that there's something strange about Arnio's group of handling informants. So what we suspected is that they gave some people the license to commit crimes. I think most of Arnio's unit understood that they did this. They knew what was happening, but they thought that they tried to get bigger cases by letting some smaller drug dealers continue with their business.
But this wasn't the case at all. In fact, Arnio was just protecting his pals.
Actually, we bumped into many cases where Arnio clearly had protected his pals. And, usually we found them because his unit had worked with some other units and it didn't go so well. So somebody had always escaped for some reason.
And of course, under Arnio's protection, even criminals could escape. Because within the police force, the Emperor Arnio was almighty. And the method of his leadership was to keep his subordinates in the dark.
He didn't want to tell everything to everybody. So the policemen didn't know the big picture. They just knew one small part of it. So nobody saw clearly what was happening. Arnio just told them, you do this, you do that. But they didn't understand the whole picture. And that is exactly how drug business works. There's just one or two persons who know everything. And the rest just know their little part in the business.
Arnio's ability to control his team mirrored the tactics of a drug lord. This raises the question, how was Arnio able to operate in this manner for such an extended period without being challenged or exposed?
Well, that is the big question. How was it possible? And the only answer is that he didn't accept any control, any monitoring by the bosses. He just thought that they do a fantastic job and they don't want anyone to meddle with it.
In 2007, concerns about the methods used by Arnio's drug police unit began to surface. The Ministry for Internal Security and Migration initiated an inquiry into allegations that Arnio's team had been protecting informants and even tipping them off about other police investigations. Arnio's response was to go on the offensive. He organized a press briefing to address these issues. On December 10th, 2007, Arnio tells the public,
"We've managed to reveal aggravated narcotic crimes 30% more than last year. Our team has had a wild desire for gratitude, but instead we've had a bucket of shit on our neck. Apparently we stepped on the toes of organized crime units, and now we have to consider that this has led to the situation of a witch hunt we are currently in."
During the briefing, Arnio also claimed that the National Bureau of Investigation, driven by envy, was orchestrating a witch hunt against his unit. In a show of protest, Arnio and about 20 of his team members commenced a sick leave, citing burnout. Their energetic media appearances during this period led some doctors to speculate that the collective sick leave was more of a protest action than actual burnout. Ultimately, most of the allegations were dropped, and Arnio emerged seemingly vindicated.
So basically, the outcome was good for Arnio and his team. And I think that was the point where Arnio thought that he was untouchable, so that now he can really start doing his own business. Nobody believes anymore that he could be a crook. He has been proven innocent in court.
Arnio publicly vowed revenge against those he believed were behind the investigation into his unit. In a bold statement to Helsingin Sanomat, he said,
"We're gonna see this through now. I'm pretty sure not every crime has been brought to the daylight. And if this goes ugly, it can get really ugly."
Following this, Arnio and his loyal subordinates in the drug unit embarked on a campaign of retribution. They filed numerous complaints against anyone they perceived as adversaries. These complaints ranged from questioning the impartiality of the investigative team to criticizing minute details like punctuation errors in official documents. Their primary strategy involved leaking information to the media.
Well, Arnio's biggest fear was the National Bureau of Investigation, because he probably knew that they were the only one who could investigate the business he was doing. So it was in Arnio's interest to make everybody believe that they were jealous, they were trying to hurt him for no reason at all. And actually, that was a story that so many people believed in. It is amazing how he got through this message to everybody.
These strategic media leaks were effective in shaping public opinion. Articles portraying Arnio as a victim of jealousy and sabotage from other police units bolstered his image as a competent and unjustly targeted officer.
As we have talked about, Arnio was a very charismatic person, and it appealed also to some journalists. And Arnio was able to give some scoops, really good stories, to some journalists. So they were happy with him, they were pals with him. So they really repaid the favors by writing stories that were nice to Arnio. Arnio was actually the anonymous source in some of the stories, many of the stories about himself. So the public didn't know that actually it was Arnio talking in the story and not independent journalist.
This approach to journalism was far from impartial and raised serious questions about journalistic ethics and objectivity.
And I really can't understand the behavior of the editors-in-chief.
Meanwhile, Susanna and Minna, the investigative journalists, maintained a transparent workflow with their editors at Helsingin Sanomat. While they used codes to protect their sources and their documents, they openly discussed the real identities of these sources with their superiors. But when articles are written in secrecy, and the main source is the person who is being investigated himself, it's a real problem on a larger scale.
I think it's really harmful for journalism if a journalist behaves like this. Because we have nothing else to sell but our credibility. So that when a person reads or hears or sees our information, he or she can be sure that we have checked all the information, everything has been done according to the ethical rules of journalism.
By 2013, the investigation into Arnio's activities, particularly his financial dealings with Ina, was intensifying. Conducted in strict confidentiality, even the police board was kept uninformed. The focus of the prosecutors was not on Arnio's and Ina's sexual relationship, but rather on Arnio's handling of money. According to Ina, Arnio had been taking her earnings from prostitution, promising safety, but never fully returning the funds. Particularly, he had a peculiar interest in 500 euro notes, exchanging them for smaller bills for Ina, and always handling the money with gloves. This peculiar behavior, along with other similar accounts, piqued Susanna and Minna's interest in Arnio's cash transactions.
Ina told us some strange things about handling cash, but this wasn't the conclusive clue. Then we heard from other sources that he had bought some cars with a lot of cash. Then we actually knew that he must have a lot of cash, and there was no explanation where it came from.
The question that loomed large was how a police officer could afford to purchase a car with cash in Finland, where cash transactions are uncommon even for small purchases like a coffee. This raised suspicions about the origin of such a substantial amount of cash.
We started suspecting something really shady. Then we started to think, where is all this cash coming from? And we thought of three different answers. The first was that because the police sometimes find a lot of cash with the criminals, so it's easy to take some of it to his own pocket. The second explanation would be that Arnio could have collected some money from the criminals to protect them from being investigated. Then the third one was that Arnio himself was involved in drug business. And then we laughed because we couldn't believe that that was true.
Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. Susanna and Minna found themselves delving deep into a complex web of evidence and conducting numerous interviews in their quest for the truth.
How we started it was that we had meetings. We had a lot of meetings. We were trying to figure out every person who could know anything, just anything about it. So we didn't try to call only to people that we knew that were not in Arnio's league or they were not pals with Arnio. We wanted to call everybody who we thought knew something. And actually, it was surprising because when we started calling, we thought that many people don't want to talk with us. But that turned out to be not true. There were people that neither of us knew. So people we were talking to for the first time, and they started to trust us, and they told us stories in the first phone call. It seemed that many people had been waiting for someone to ask questions. They wanted someone to look into this business. I think there was a lot of frustration within the police that many people had tried to sort of tell this to higher bosses and trying to alarm everybody that there is something going on. You have to look into this. But nobody was listening. Nobody wanted to listen to it because Arnio was so good in what he did. He was such a charismatic person that nobody wanted to believe that this is actually a drug lord we are talking about.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
While Susanna and Minna interviewed over 70 individuals, prosecutors became intrigued by Jari Arnio's dealings with cash, particularly after learning about Ina's testimony.
My name is Jukka Haavisto, and I am a special prosecutor and the head of the Southern Finland prosecution area.
Jukka, the lead investigator of the Arnio case, along with his colleague Krista Sukkola, found the case to be exceptionally unique in Finnish criminal history.
I think it was the scope of the case that made it special because it lasted about 10 years, and also how many different branches it had. So it is probably the biggest case in Finnish history that had many different ensembles. It all started when Ina said she had given money to Arnio, and we started to investigate that like any economic crime. So we started with investigating Arnio's bank statements and seeing if there was anything in there. And there were. There were strange money transfers in there that helped us to investigate Ina's claims, but also that's how we found out about Trevok and started that investigation.
Trevok, a tracking device company established by former police officers in 2007, caught their attention. Arnio had been investing significantly in Trevok, much more than his salary would seemingly allow. The connection became even more suspicious when it was discovered that the main financier's sister, with the maiden name Vilhunen, was linked to an organized crime leader named Keijo Vilhunen.
It was one of our breakthroughs. It sounded strange that a company that sells secret surveillance items to different government officials, how can this company's background people have connections to organized crime? We had to wonder how this surveillance information could be used.
Before Susanna and Minna began their investigation, the National Bureau of Investigation, the NBI, had already initiated the so-called barrel case. In December 2011, Dutch police seized a barrel containing 141 kilos of hashish destined for Finland. The NBI informed Arnio about their operation, including their plan to track the barrel with a GPS locator. Arnio showed an unusual level of interest in this case.
In this barrel case that started in 2011 and where the investigators started to investigate drug smuggling to Finland, they got interested about a so-called Pasila man, which meant that this person's telesurveillance located him in the Pasila area.
Pasila, a district in Helsinki, was the focal point of the barrel smuggling case. The main suspect, often referred to as the Pasila man, was frequently located there. However, at the beginning of the year, right as the National Bureau of Investigation, NBI, commenced their investigation into the barrel case, all phone activity linked to the Pasila man abruptly ceased. In February 2012, 2 months after this silence, the phone lines reactivated and a significant meeting was arranged. Keijo Vilhunen, a leader in an organized crime unit and a name that would later be tied to the company Trevok, met with another individual from his organization. This person, whom we'll call John, was a resident of Pasila. The NBI discovered that the Helsinki drug police had been monitoring John's phone conversations. When the NBI requested this information from the drug police, the request was denied. Acquiring their own surveillance on John, the NBI initially considered him a potential suspect as the Pasila man. But after closely examining his movements and comparing them with those of the actual Pasila man, they concluded that John wasn't their main suspect. It eventually became clear that John had been unwittingly caught up in an attempted setup. This realization shifted the focus of the investigation, As the NBI began to piece together the larger puzzle of the barrel smuggling operation and its connections within the criminal underworld of Helsinki.
Anya's unit and the National Bureau of Investigation have investigated the barrels case together, but there were huge problems and everything didn't go smoothly. But we never found out what was happening during that process.
The NBI, unaware of the Treva connection, began monitoring the activities of Keijo Vilhunen. They observed a meeting between Vilhunen and Arnio, raising suspicions about their relationship. Now, it's not completely uncommon for cops to meet with criminals. However, this kind of arrangement is uncommon. When a criminal is under investigation, and the police set a meeting with him without telling the other investigators about it. The NBI waited a few days for Arnio to inform them about the content of the meeting, but once they didn't hear from him, they contacted Arnio himself and asked about this meeting with Keijo. Arnio didn't give any reliable excuse.
When we were investigating with Minna, we found out that there were many stories about Arnio and Keijo Vilhunen, a criminal boss, and they were having some business together that nobody knew exactly what it was. And at that point, we had 73 sources, and 9 of them told us about this really strange business with Arnio and Vilhunen.
The lead detective of the NBI, focusing on the barrel case, was intent on uncovering the identity of the elusive Pasila man. He scrutinized a particular day's communication records, noting that the Pasila man and Keijo Vilhunen exchanged a flurry of text messages, which ceased only when their phones were in close proximity. This pattern led the detective to deduce that they must have met in person at that time. Upon examining the location data more closely, the detective realized that the meeting place could be the same spot where Jari Arnio, the head of Helsinki's drug police, had previously encountered Keijo. To confirm his suspicions without raising alarm, he discreetly asked a colleague to verify the owner of a certain BMW known to be associated with these meetings. This inquiry revealed a striking connection. The BMW was registered to Arnio, who both lived and worked in the Pasila area. This discovery was a significant development in the case, and the NBI detective shared this crucial piece of information with journalists Susanna and Minna for their investigation, as noted in their book.
It was like I was hit in the head with a sledgehammer. That, my God, is this it? Can this be correct?
Initially, Arnio and his team offered implausible explanations for the phone locations. However, by the end of 2012, Arnio claimed the phones were used for official police work. The police board then decided to handle the case jointly with the Helsinki police, allowing the NBI to step back. Almost a year later, Susanna and Minna were prepared to publish their groundbreaking story.
When we were ready to publish the first story, we tried to get some comments from the leader of the investigation, but he asked us to postpone the publication for a little bit. And he had to give us a reason, and he gave the reason that they wanted to investigate it, Arnio, without Arnio knowing that he was under investigation. And so we did. Our condition for the postponement was that when Arnio gets to know about this investigation, we get to publish the story. And they had to tell that to us the same day. And that's exactly what happened. So it was on the 5th of September 2013, on Arnio's birthday, when Arnio first got to know that he was under investigation, and on the same day we published the story.
When Susanna and Minna's story finally hit the newsstands, Arnio's media allies were quick to come to his defense.
It turned out to be a huge story, so everybody, all the other media outlets, started to quoting it. It was huge, but right away it became clear that some of the journalists didn't believe in it. They thought this was just another witch hunt against this great policeman. But yeah, that was a good story. So it was an easy story to believe. It was an easy explanation to everything that was going on.
Many people preferred simple explanations over harsh realities. The notion that a celebrated police hero could be a criminal mastermind, deceiving the public and orchestrating corruption within Finland, was hard for many to accept. Susanna later discovered text messages in police investigation files showing Arnio's communication with a colleague during the Helsingin Sanomat's investigation into his activities.
Yeah, then we found some text messages by Arnio, and for instance that Arnio had all along known what we were doing, so he was very well informed. And for instance, one text message was that the bitches of Helsingin Sanomat are pressing hard.
Shortly after the first exposé, Arnio was arrested, and the case began to unravel rapidly. Before his arrest, Jukka and his team had already compiled extensive evidence. Following Arnio's arrest, a search of his home yielded even more incriminating materials for the prosecutors.
In the house searches, there were about 100 people working, and there were about 20 targets where they searched from. There were documents, computers, phones. If you think about a regular phone, there can be 20,000 messages in there, even if you have deleted them. So we had massive amounts of evidence material we eventually went through.
After this, Susanna and Minna released an article detailing Arnio's connections with Keijo Villonen. This revelation led their editors at Helsingin Sanomat to temporarily reassign the journalists for their safety.
We didn't know how the criminals would react to this information, so our bosses thought that it would be best if we lived in a hotel for a while with Minna. So we did. So we went to several hotels for about 5 nights, I think it was. And the first night was Hotel Scandic in the center of Helsinki. And later we found out that also Keijo Vilhonen wanted to flee. So he had also checked into a hotel, and in the same hotel as we were. We didn't see each other. And to be honest, I wouldn't have recognized Keijo Vilhonen at that point. But maybe we were in the breakfast room together.
By December 2013, Arnio had been in custody for a month related to the Trevok case. He was pushing for release from pretrial detention. These court sessions are typically private and uneventful, which usually limits media interest. However, on December 13th, 2013, Susanna was present at the courthouse.
We didn't know about the fact that Arnio was suspected of being involved in drug business before there was a court hearing about his continuation of arrest. And we couldn't go into the room because it was closed doors. But there was a document outside the door which stated the crimes he was suspected of. And there was that he was suspected of drug offenses. And that was the moment that we knew that, oh my God, this is going to be big. We knew right away that, okay, this is a barrels case. So now we started to understand what was wrong with it.
And what was it?
It turned out that Arnio was the leader of the whole barrel case. He was the one that was smuggling drugs into Finland.
That day in court, Susanna wasn't alone. She was accompanied by a colleague from another news organization. A legal journalist from MTV was also present when a critical document was posted on the courtroom door.
I couldn't literally believe my eyes because I remember that when I walked to the door, a secretary had just come and put this document on the door. So I walked there, but I didn't have my glasses. So I look up there and I don't see anymore so well. I sort of saw that it was about drug offenses and I couldn't believe. So I ran to my handbag and then I searched my glasses and went back. My colleague from MTV had gone there and he was a, oh, whoa, whoa. And then we started calling to our desks. Quickly, we have to get this news out online. I remember also that I tried to call Minna, but Minna was talking on the phone and then I typed an email to her. Stop talking right now. Urgent. And Minna called her right away. We typed a new story as quickly as possible. But I think that MTV3 was about 15 seconds quicker than us.
Because of the glasses.
Because of the glasses. And because Minna was talking on the phone.
This time, not even Arnio's media friends could downplay the gravity of the situation.
This was a huge story, of course, because people started to see that there was actually something wrong. And I think that at this point, many people understood that there was something wrong with Arnia's unit. So I don't think it was considered to be a witch hunt anymore. So people were beginning to see the truth. Basically, I think it was the turning point.
The court ruled that Arnio should remain in custody, marking the beginning of an extensive trial process. Each court session seemed to follow a similar pattern.
Well, Arnio has an explanation for everything. And after he gives an explanation, the prosecutors try to confirm if it is true. It turns out not to be true. Then Arnio has another explanation. But it can get very messy if you sort of lie all the time. And there were points where he got confused what he had said earlier. For instance, one of them was about meeting Ina. So he forgot that he had told the truth about meeting Ina before and starts to tell another story when Ina is heard. Or actually, it was his lawyer who sort of forgot that. But Arnio could have said, that's not actually what happened. But Arnio goes on and tries to make Ina look like a liar, although she is actually telling the truth and the same story as Arnio had told before. It's very confusing when you lie and you can't remember what you have lied about.
One major discrepancy in Arnio's story was his unexplained wealth. Nearly 450,000 euros in his accounts had no legitimate source. Arnio attempted various explanations, but they fell short. Furthermore, it wasn't just his bank accounts that raised eyebrows. Right after Arnio's arrest in November 2013, Susanna and a photographer, while outside Arnio's house in Porvo, noticed something suspicious. The pieces of the puzzle only came together for Susanna after delving into the interrogation documents.
We had found out that Arnio was building a big house in Porvo, about maybe 60 kilometers from Helsinki. And we decided that we needed some photos from it. So I drove there with a photographer. And when we get there, there were a lot of guys on the yard. And we are like, oh no, there are building workers here. How do we get the pictures now? And well, we don't. Because as soon as we get there, there comes one guy who starts shouting at me and or at us, and you have to go away and don't come out and get away right away. He was very aggressive, and we didn't get any photos. So I tried to look at as closely as I could to the building to see how it was, if there was anything I could write in the paper about. And there was something weird about the whole situation, because we were in the middle of woods, basically. And this man is shouting to us, we are in the car. And in the car, it says that we are from press, so they must have known it. One of the guys is looking at us, and the others have their backs on us, which is strange, because there was something interesting going on, and they still are not looking.
The threatening situation makes Susanna and her photographer leave. It was only a year and a half later, after reviewing the case files, that Susanna realized the so-called construction workers were actually Arnio's close associates, possibly gardening on Arnio's behalf. This raised a significant question. Why would police officers do gardening for their superior? Was it connected to the 64,000 euros later discovered in Arnio's garden in spring 2014? Were they helping Arnio hide evidence? Arnio's explanation that jealous NBI agents planted the money to frame him only added to the absurdity of his defense. Despite his outlandish claims, the prosecution's case was robust and hard to refute.
We calculate the amount of our material by how many pages are there. I believe in this case the amount is about 60,000 pages. And unlike in many cases, our pages don't come from bank statements. We had an infinite amount of hearings. But of course, with this sort of case, where we had several different branches, like Ina's part, Trevor case, the barrel case, and informant case, but just the barrel and Trevor cases were closer to 50,000 pages of material.
Even with all the evidence presented, some within the police force remained convinced of Arnio's innocence, and his closest associates continued to defend him.
Arnio had a small group of policemen around him that believed, or I don't know how much they actually believed him in him, but they felt that they had to support him. And that is the big question, because I'm sure that everybody knew at some point that, okay, Arnio has to be a drug lord. We all knew he was. He turned out to be. But for some reason, they continued to support him. They continued to tell stories, even in court, that supported Arnio's stories that were very unlikely to be true. Even when there was proof they were lying, they still continued to lie for him. But you have to ask why this happened, because they must have known that he's a crook. So why did they support him? There has to be a reason. And I think that nobody likes the reason.
What do you think the reason is?
The reason is that for some reason they can't tell the truth.
So he has something to keep his hold on to them.
Exactly. That is the only possible reason.
It took over 5 years from Arnio's arrest for the final verdict to be announced. On June 27th, 2019, the court found Arnio guilty of several serious crimes, including drug offenses, abuse of official position, witness intimidation, fraud, and bribery, among others. He received a 13-year prison sentence. Following this, another trial began, accusing Arnio of foreknowledge about the murder of Volkan Unsal in 2003, but failing to prevent it. The court determined that while he knew of the murder plot, there was insufficient evidence to prove he was aware of the imminent danger. In 2022, Arnio was acquitted in this case. After serving half of his 13-year sentence, as is typical for first-time offenders, Arnio was released on probation in the summer of 2022. For Susanna, this case remains a significant and unforgettable part of her journalistic career.
It has been extremely meaningful, and it has been a shocking case for Finland, because we have always been proud of how little corruption there is in Finland. And this turned out to be not so true. It also showed how little surveillance or control there is among the police. So basically, Arnio's unit could do whatever they wanted to do, and the bosses didn't look after at all. What are you doing? And they were just happy that the results were so good. Well, actually, now that we know what basically what has happened, we don't know everything. It was actually a really clever business for Arnio, because he was running his own drug business and sort of picking out everybody else who tried to compete with him. So actually, this was ingenious.
The Arnio case stands as Finland's most extensive criminal investigation and trial to date, profoundly impacting Finnish society. It brought to light issues of corruption and highlighted the need for more stringent internal oversight. As a result, the police have revamped their control systems to prevent the recurrence of such a situation. An intriguing question remains. Was Arnio always corrupt, or did he begin as a dedicated officer who later succumbed to criminality? Susanna suspects the truth of Arnio's transformation might never be revealed, as she believes he may take it to his grave. Susanna and Minna's investigative work on Arnio, which led to articles and a book, earned them accolades. Their journalism illuminated grave issues previously shrouded in secrecy by severe crimes. However, their efforts also highlighted the need for more stringent controls within the media, similar to those in policing. In an era where misinformation can rapidly spread across various platforms, maintaining public trust in media integrity is crucial. Journalists should uphold the truth without compromise, and the Arnio case exemplifies the importance of this principle.
This episode was written and reported by Marika Honkatukia. The script consultant was Eli Salo. Producer and sound designer was Suvi Tuli Kataya. Narrated by Tova Valnay. Executive producer is Nils Bergman. The main source for this episode was Susanna Reinbath's and Minna Pasi's book, Kaisari Arnio, The Emperor Arnio. Nordic Crimes is a Tall Tale production. Please rate, review, and recommend the show to friends. Your support helps us reach listeners who might also appreciate the content. Thank you in advance.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.